That sounds familiar. And we have a room full of Chicago right now, don't we, Mary?
We have a show full of Chicago every day because have we broken the news to them that we have stolen their music?
Oh, for the opening theme? Shh. Well, don't let them know. Yeah. I'm going to let the guys introduce themselves so everybody can connect a voice with a name. So let's go around the horn with Lee, Robert, and Lou, and Jason. So that because we don't have supers to put on the screen here when people talk, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Lee Lochnane.
Robert Lamb of the South Side.
Wait a minute, let me get Lou. Oh, hold on, there we go.
Wait, Bob is trying to operate the board for the first time in his life.
Well, I've got
so many people,
so many microphones.
Studio.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lou.
Lou Pardini, keyboards from California.
Jason Scheff with a higher voice.
There we go. This is like, you know, if I were on stage with these guys right before the last song, I'd introduce the band behind me, which would never happen.
Yeah, right.
Because I wouldn't be up there on stage. Good to have you all with us. One of the things I love about the band is, like, Jason, you're one of the new guys because you've only been with them how many years?
28. Brand spanking new.
Does it ever bother you? Like, do you ever say, oh, yeah, the new guy? Yeah.
No.
No.
You know, what a great problem to have.
I know, really.
Compared to, you know, great singers and writers, it's wonderful. I mean, there's nothing to get mad at.
It's interesting now to read about this new song, America, that Lee, you came up with. And, you know, they're meeting right now as we speak, they're meeting in Washington to try to resolve this. And your song, though, I think is going to have some legs beyond whatever they work out today or tomorrow, isn't it?
I believe so. The subject matter of the song really has probably been going on since 1776, and they still haven't quite worked it out. So the meeting today, I don't have high hopes that they will actually come to a decision, but they should, because from my perspective, they're doing very little for the people that they're supposed to be working for, and I think that's really where the focus should lie.
Yeah, there's anger directed to both sides of the aisle
now. They're blaming each other.
Mm-hmm. Can you get the music pumped through the system where they're all meeting?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Have you tweeted?
We sent it all to them. We
you
sent
did?
The song and the video to everyone.
Cool.
It's America's the name of it.
America's the name.
And we'll play some of that for you in just a second. First, let's go around and talk a little bit about this band. And what is this year 46 for you guys, Robert?
It is.
Yeah. I to be honest with you, I guess I'm in denial. I don't really like to think about either my age or the age of the band. I just like to think about what we're going to do next.
Yeah. And Lou, the band now has this, it's one of the hot iTunes right now, right, America?
Yes.
And so after all these years to see this happen, how does that feel?
It feels great. You know, it's very rewarding to see not only was it great and fun to sing the song, but to see Lee's song and his lyrics being so popular with iTunes users. That was pretty surreal to see it fourth on the hot list, two ahead of Bruno Mars.
And why do you think that is? Besides the fact that you guys are great and you have such a repertoire.
Well, I think I would like to think that we made a pretty good single and Lee wrote a great song and the lyrics mean something to people. And I think Chicago having a history as writing, you know, not only love songs but political thoughts, you know, I think people kind of are pretty enamored with that idea again.
And I think also there's an awareness that we're actually recording brand new original songs again, and this is only a small portion of what is to come.
Did a lot go into that? You know, the thought of writing original songs and trying to put them out there. A lot of times, great bands like yours, people go to the concerts and they want to hear all the oldies. So
they still do.
And you still do
that. Yeah.
I know because I was just at your concert at Ravinia
right.
And it was like, you know, it was never ending. When you go to one of your concerts, all you can think about is how did these people record so many hits? I mean, it's like you bring it all back.
Well, the way we did it was, for the first dozen albums or so, is that we toured every year nonstop, and somehow we recorded an album every 9 months.
So and how did that happen? How could you be touring and recording?
They didn't read the small print in the contract.
Yeah, we didn't know any better.
Yeah. Let me get to Jason here. And you know, Jason, I'm going to have to ask you about your dad because he played with Elvis for so many years. Is he still with us? Is your dad?
Yes, he is. Thanks for
Tell me something because first of all, he was on tour with Elvis for many years, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in the TCB band when Elvis came back in '69. And wasn't sure whether the fans were still going to be with him. That comeback special really just launched that second phase, and so he put a group of the finest in L.A. together, and that became the TCB band, and taking care of business.
Was there ever a Take Your Son to Work Day?
Yeah, in fact, the last year. My father came to San Diego because he went to Los Angeles. My parents split up when I was pretty young. And so when they came through town, he said, I got a ticket for you and your brothers to come and see the show. And so we went to San Diego, and Elvis had a no-comp policy. Well, Colonel Parker did. And so they sat us in this first section of...
No complimentary tickets.
So Dad had to pay for them. So the first section of seats where you weren't on the floor was where we were. And my dad was really upset. So he goes, I'm bringing you to Vegas. So they took us to Vegas, and my brother Darren and I, we got a black shirt and went on... basically in the percussion stand. Dad said, I got you a great seat. You're going to be in the percussion stand. The crazy thing is that we, Chicago, have played that venue, which was the Hilton, Las Vegas Hilton back then. It became the Las Vegas Hotel, and we still play there. So when we go there, Robert pretty much is positioned at the spot that I was back then, and it's cool. Eerie to go. Yeah.
And Jason wrote a song about it called Bigger Than Elvis.
Yeah.
Nice. I did you ever hear? I mean, what was the bottom line on the answer to the question? What was he really like? What did your dad think of him? What did your dad think of working with him?
He loved him. Dad wrote a book that's out right now, and basically, my dad has always been a guy that's very concerned about being cool, and doesn't want to be embarrassed. So when he got the call about that, he thought it was just going to be a joke going down there to meet this guy, and was not. He said the minute he met him, he was just overwhelmed with this presence of how cool this guy was, and didn't have this air about him, and he was just beautiful, this physical presence. And then when he sang, and then the band kicked up, you know, when Elvis would really start giving it, the band would get. That's when they. So he loved him. He thought he was a great guy.
Jason Scheff, Lou Pardini, Lee Lockney, and Robert Lamb from Chicago with us. We'll talk more about what they've just come up with, America. We'll play some of that for you and talk more music and Chicago and why these guys aren't in the Rock Hall of Fame. We'll do that right after we do this. Visiting with Chicago today, Lee Lockney, Lou Pardini, Jason Scheff, Robert Lamb, four of the guys with us. Got about half of the group here, and Robert, this is the one you came up with, isn't it?
Yes. You never know where songs are going to end up. This song started humbly enough with a 12-string guitar that only had 10 strings.
Is that right?
I wrote the riff, wrote the song, showed it to Terry, and he really made it happen.
Yeah. And do you get tired of people asking you what this is about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the answer would be?
I would be less tired if I had a really good answer, if there was really a good reason to call it 25 or 6 to 4, but it's kind of a lame excuse of a title for
it's
a song.
Not really.
Could you tell time when you wrote this song?
Well, that was, does anybody really know
you
what time
well,
it is?
You wouldn't think so.
Well, he was writing the song all day, so it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, he was squinting to the other side of the room where the clock was.
Actually, I don't know if it was on stage or somewhere, but I actually heard you give a fairly cogent explanation of the song.
I?
Yeah. Yeah,
you have your moments.
Yeah, you want to try? You want to try it again?
It's just a reference to time.
Yeah,
I was looking for something to call the song, and it was really kind of just a working title.
Really
stuck
purposely, sort of nebulous.
purposely nebulous because that was the era of nebulae.
Yeah. A lighter shade of pale, that sort of thing.
All right. Yeah. So who came up with Color My World, and how did that evolve?
That's actually a Jimmy Pankow song. It really wasn't really a song. It was a movement of a longer piece of work. He decided to write a ballet, a multi-movement ballet. It is about a 15-minute piece of music, but Color My World is really just a snippet.
Right. Make Me Smile and Color My World came out of that piece.
Oh, it's just such a great piece, and right now I can see the disco ball going around, and I am waiting for someone in the very dark room to ask me to dance.
What was the disco slow ball? Really?
Yeah, when I was in I don't know, 8th or 9th grade. I mean, like everybody was waiting for Color My World so that we could dance slow with our, crushes.
And that still happens to this day.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. And the boys would have the courage to get up and dance slowly.
This is your big chance, boys.
So you have almost, it's almost 50 years of success now, and tons of million sellers and great singles and albums, and fans are always talking about why you're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This came up here the other day, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I think it really is all about Jan Wenner, right? The Rolling Stone Grand High Exalted Mystic Ruler, and who he wants in there and who he doesn't want in there. Doesn't he control that?
Well, go ahead.
Well, yeah,
go ahead, Robert.
I mean, I have always thought so, and I have been told so by other people who are on the various nominating boards, because these things go through stages. But I know that this year we have people who have really looked into the reasons as to why we're not in the Hall of Fame, and what is the current thinking, because really the nominations just occurred. They all met the board, and they talked about it, and it was actually written about in a daily blog by some mucky muck in the music business, who kind of went through the various potential nominees, and down around the 12th or so entry was Chicago and Bon Jovi together, and why we probably really don't deserve to be in, except for the fact that we've been popular. So,
well, actually, isn't that what it's all about?
Which completely negates and ignores the fact that even just the first Chicago album, because it was so different and so groundbreaking and had so many hits, just that one album, and there have been many artists nominated and elected to the Hall of Fame who really only had one or two good albums. So, to be honest with you, I personally don't care if we ever get in or don't get in.
Well, we've been eligible since 1994, so it's nearly 20 years.
And by the way, Hall of Fame, like popular, I mean, like, that's
fame.
That's fame. Right. It's a Hall
but
of Fame.
But we still get to do over 100 shows a year, and we have a
over the
career
world.
All over the world.
Hundreds of thousands of people.
We're loving the career. Everybody's more excited about what we're doing now than we have been in many years. We're recording brand new music. We're putting it out on the website. We've been building the website for 3 years, chicagotheband.com. I mean, what could be better? And the perception of most fans is that we already are in the Hall of Fame. When they find out we're not, they're incensed.
Right.
That's what I thought, that, ask a lot of the people that are in the hall if they'd like to trade.
Sure.
Yeah. If they would like to trade places. If they would like to trade their one hit or one album, like Robert says, and have a career.
Yeah, but it's annoying. It's just
it's
annoying.
It's still annoying, yeah. It really is. Yeah. I want to hear the new record.
All right, we'll get to America. And I want to talk a little bit, too, about some of the clubs you guys used to play at around Chicago back in the day.
Sure.
You remember those, Lee?
Barely.
Yeah. All right. Hang on. It's Chicago on WGN. America. America is free. America. This is the song we're talking about with the guys from Chicago today. We just heard that meeting was postponed in Washington. So, Lee, your song is going to be good for a while longer, I think.
Yeah. They're going to have lunch first, I guess.
Here's a little bit of it. And I think this speaks to the way all of us have been feeling lately, an anger directed on both sides of the aisle. So were you watching the news one night, Lee, and you said, that's enough, I've had enough?
Well, actually, this is before this particular brouhaha had started, and my wife and I were sitting around talking about just the state of America and the disappearance, really, of the American dream. And that was the impetus behind the song.
And all of a sudden, this is hot on iTunes now.
Yeah.
Writing about politics is not new to you guys. In the fifth album, you guys wrote Dialogue, which was about Richard Nixon. And then you also wrote While the City Sleeps, mm-hmm. which is about mm-hmm. politicians. Talk about that. Like, why were you guys always into this?
You know, we are from a generation that... that were among people who marched for civil rights and who protested and marched against the war in Vietnam. And activism became part of what our generation did differently than previous generations. And, you know, we were watching civil rights developed on television. We were watching a war on television for the first time. And so all of a sudden that became the subject of discussion, and it found its way into not only films but pop music. And so this is what we were thinking of, and this is what was in front of our eyes.
And this is what you probably talked about when you weren't singing, right?
Absolutely.
Well, right, and some of us were more interested in it than others, because now I have grown a little bit more, and I was able to come up with America, whereas when Robert was writing the social commentaries back on the fifth album, I wasn't quite as interested.
Yeah.
So it's everything changes.
Well, now it affects us all.
Yeah, and,
right, exactly.
And as you're together for so many years, 46 or whatever it is now, of course you change. Let me reintroduce you guys. Lee Locknane, Robert Lamb, Lou Pardini, and Jason Scheff from Chicago with us here today. And when you guys started out back in the late 60s and you're playing places like Barnaby's on State, actually when you started out, it was a time of great change too, and a time when the album sales were starting to really get hot and surpass singles, right?
Yes,
and
yeah.
I remember some story, help me out with this. There was some story about one of your early music going to album first. What am I trying to think of here? I remember there was some that you actually got play on FM first,
well,
didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, the fact that our first several albums were all double albums, which roughly, time-wise, are the equivalent of one very long CD nowadays. But, it was, again, an era of longer pieces of music, longer than the 2.5 minutes that got played on AM radio.
Right.
And FM radio emerged as the media for the generation.
And Lou Pardini, you're Mr. Percussion, aren't you? I mean, you've worked with Stevie Wonder and Santana, and so now working with Chicago, talk about what it's like and how everybody's a little different.
Well, actually, I guess keyboard is a percussion instrument, but I play keyboards and
lead
sing
vocals, yeah.
And lead vocals and
that's Lee. That's Lou singing on that.
On America.
Yeah.
And. Yeah, it was. I've written songs for other people, for people like Smokey Robinson, and then I wrote a song for the Temptations that Stevie Wonder played harmonica on, and so that was that connection.
Okay.
And then to come first full circle would be with this band, is a band that I grew up just absolutely loving. And be able to sing and play with them has been a real blessing.
What's Stevie Wonder like?
Stevie Wonder, I wasn't at that session. I wrote the song, but my friends that produced it said that before he recorded his harmonica on the song, that he sang them 20 of his songs that he was writing.
That he was writing?
At his house, at his home studio.
He's got a lot of material.
He's got a lot of material. They were telling me he's got songs that nobody's heard. I'm sure. Incredible.
Yeah. Did you get to work with Carlos Santana?
I sang a song on a percussionist named Alex Acuna's record that I wrote with him, and I did the vocal, and Carlos Santana played guitar on it. So we did something in the studio.
And Jason, when you're Jason Sheff, when you're singing some of these songs, and one of the unique things about the band Chicago is the music is so special. People can't do it. They can't duplicate it. You don't hear people doing covers of your music. Is it hard to sing some of these songs? I mean, technically?
I don't think so.
That's because you're talented.
Well, it probably is, but I'm just stupid. I just said, why not? You know, the sky's the limit. But I'm a top 40 musician. I'll tell you what. I never set out to be this artist, this artiste. I just loved playing great songs. I loved being in bands that played great songs. And then this came along, and it was wonderful because I got to be a part of performing all this great material and then making records of my own with them to have my little piece of the legacy. So
you were only 23 at the time when you joined, right?
Yeah.
How did they let you in?
Well, I think they were a little nervous, but
we carded him first.
You know, the other good news is that these guys had been through a first wave of success, so they were on the other side of you know. I'll put it this way: after "Will You Still Love Me" did its thing, and that was my moment, the first real big hit that I was a part of, and my voice was on it. If I was with a bunch of other 24-year-old kids experiencing it the first time, we probably would have lost our minds. But I looked at the guys, and they were just going, "All right, what's the next single?" And so I'm going, "All right, what's the next single?" You know, and they were just a well-oiled machine and just great mentors.
This question, I guess, is for any of you, but how do you feel when you see young people getting success these days through programs such as American Idol, The Voice, and
Auto-Tune.
Auto-Tune, America's Got Talent. Yeah, all those shows, I mean, those are actually making the, in most cases, the very short-lived careers of a lot of people.
Well, I think actually things haven't changed all that much since we started. There are some artists that will record stuff and have a career based on what they do, and it will stick, and the music that comes through them will maintain itself through decades. And many, many other people will record one record, have a hit, and then fade away.
And there will be many, many more who record songs and nobody ever hears them.
Yeah,
I think that the cool thing about American Idol and The Voice and other shows like that is it exposes talent, voices, to millions and millions of people in place of what used to be the music industry. So it's just become another replacement for lots and lots of venues and lots of radio stations and lots of music media.
Will we ever hear rap coming out of you guys?
We already have.
Yeah, I rapped on Chicago 22.
Yeah.
On there you Chicago go, Robert
22.
Lamb,
okay.
The rapper. You got to get a different name.
Sleeping in the middle of the bed again. Yeah.
There you go. It's Chicago and Lee Lockney and Robert Lamb with us.
Lou Pardini, Lamb,
Jason Sheff, Snoop Lammy Lamb. He's now known as, and America's the latest hot on iTunes, and it's really an expression of our times now and what's going on with the government shutdown. And as we were talking to Congressman Louis Gutierrez earlier today, and how compromise just is a word that doesn't exist anymore. It used to be these guys would fight during the day, and then they'd go out for a steak and cocktails at night, and things would get worked out. Right. Doesn't happen anymore. Right. And I think a lot of that frustration is in Lee Loughnane's song with Chicago America.
It's important for it to happen right now.
Boy, and, is it ever.
For them not to get together and really work a solution out is a travesty.
Yeah, it's idiotic. I think now politicians have actually gone down below TV newscasters in the public's opinion poll.
Reelect everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck, guys. I know you've got a busy schedule ahead of you. And next year, if you can believe this, even bigger and better than ever, playing concerts all over the place.
Yeah, we can't wait to hear about your upcoming schedule.
And it's great that you keep on keeping on here as we near 50 years of Chicago. How about that?
And stop in anytime you're in the hood again, okay? Because we love it when you stop in here. Thanks.
Thanks, Marianne. Thanks, Bob.
Good to see
Good to see all of you.